My name is Rowdy Roddy Piper, and you ain't seen nothing yet.
I'm talking to Cyndi Lauper. I'm going over there. Hello, darling. No, I won't have a date with you. I'm sorry you have beer on your breath. And she's going to sit there and grab my leg. She's going to sit there and lay down and grab my leg. 104 pounds. Me, who's beat everybody in the world, and expects me to sit there and do nothing about her. So I kick her 12 yards across the field.
She's a woman. She's a woman in the
but
ring.
She's a woman. I'll tell you something. If you slap me, I'll knock you out.
Because obviously, if you live in San Francisco and you are going out with gals, obviously they belong in the Cow Palace. I saw one, the only thing she was missing was antlers. She would have been in season, Jack, man.
I was born a year late. I live on pressure. I am the boss. I'm the one that's going back in there for the rematch. Not because I won it, because the champion wants it, because I made him look like a fool. They raised my hand. I'm the first man to ever beat the champion. I am the champion.
Weighing 232 pounds, Rowdy Roddy Piper.
This is episode 394 of the Solomonster Sounds Off here for Saturday, August 1st, 2015. I am the Solomonster, and boy do I hate doing shows like this. I am recording this podcast a day earlier than usual, so I haven't had a whole lot of time to really let this sink in. Hopefully I can do it justice, because the wrestling world has lost another icon this week. It's second in less than 2 months. And two of the greatest talkers, no less, in the history of the business. Dusty Rhodes, and now Rowdy Roddy Piper. Per TMZ, Piper died in his sleep Thursday night from cardiac arrest, just 61 years old. Piper was one of my father's favorite wrestlers. My dad actually went to the very first WrestleMania at Madison Square Garden to see Piper and Hogan in the main event. He went with my grandfather. And, you know, I was thinking about this before, about what a shit year this has been. And for me personally, you know, I lost my dad earlier this year. And in terms of wrestling, we lost Dusty, who was this huge, kind of larger-than-life figure. And now Piper, you know, Dusty in June, Piper in July. It's just what a terrible year this has been. My childhood was pretty much Hulk Hogan, Roddy Piper, Macho Man, and the Ultimate Warrior. That was my childhood in a nutshell right there. You look at those four guys, one's career just died last week. The other three, none of them were really that old. If you think about it, I mean, the Warrior was in his, you know, maybe his mid-50s, a year or two younger than that. And you look at Savage, who was close to 60. I don't think he had quite turned 60. He was, again, a couple of years shy of that, I think. And then Piper here at 61. All dead from heart attacks, which, you know, I guess really shouldn't come as a surprise considering the era of wrestling they all came up in. It's not a coincidence that all of their hearts just stopped. You live a certain lifestyle, and it's bound to catch up with you at some point, but it just sucks because you know he's not the first, and you know he's not going to be the last, and it's just a terrible thing because they... Yeah, they get older, and they kind of settle down with their families. Piper was married to his wife for just years and years and years, and they had like four kids. I don't know if he has any grandkids or not, but it's at that point in your life when you should be able to kind of enjoy the fruits of your labor and sit back and relax and enjoy, time with your family. And then, boom, you know, it just kind of comes out of nowhere. And it looks like that may be what happened here. Piper was acting very, very strange of late. I mean, you know, Piper was always a strange guy, let's be honest, but more so lately. The stuff with Steve Austin and claiming that Austin got him fired from Podcast One, which Austin gave a very different account of how that all went down, I'm more inclined to probably, you know, believe Austin on that than I am Piper. Piper's version of events was just very weird. And then he was on Rich Eisen's show last week. I think it was the day after the Hogan news broke. And Eisen asked him, you know, hey, what are your thoughts on this whole controversy with Hulk? And Piper just started rambling incoherently about random wrestling stories. It was just one of the wackiest interviews I've seen in a long time. He was just a complete mess. So, you know, something must have been wrong. I don't know if there was an underlying health issue that caused him to act that way or if his mind was just, I don't know. But I was not the only one who watched that and thought to myself, hey, something's off here. And then a week later, he dies. I know Bruce Pritchard, Brother Love, call him whatever you want. He tweeted that Piper had called, left him a voicemail about 9 o'clock on Thursday night, but he never had a chance to call him back. The whole thing is just really sad. One of the people on our Facebook page had a great analogy. Like Robin Williams was to comedy, that's what Roddy Piper was to pro wrestling. You couldn't look away. You know, the guy commanded your attention whenever he spoke and was one of the most entertaining figures of his genre, which he absolutely was. Piper was never known for being the flashiest guy in the ring. You know, he was a small guy compared to those giant, jacked-up monsters that WWF had on its roster in the 80s. But he wasn't somebody who did moves off the top rope or anything like that. He was a brawler. That's what he was. He was never the best wrestler, let's say, inside the ring, the way a guy like Ricky Steamboat would be, or Ric Flair, or Bret Hart. But Piper was old school. I mean, he was 100% old school. He knew what he was doing when he was in that ring 100% of the time. And the real money with Piper was with his mouth. You know, he talked people into the buildings. His feuds with Hogan and Mr. T, Adrian Adonis, Bruno Sammartino, which is a feud a lot of people may not know even took place, but they had a short run together. They had a couple of matches. It wasn't about, you know, work rate. It was the feuds and the promos. That's really what it was, the selling point for Piper, right? Those are the things that built to the matches. And that's where Piper really shined. He didn't need a title to get himself over or to stay over. He probably was the biggest name, at least in WWE, he was probably the biggest name to have never won the world title, who probably should have won it. And I have no doubt that if they put that title on Piper in the mid-80s, like 84, 85, as hot of a heel as he was at that time, he would have been huge. And the real money would have been for the babyface. Whoever that babyface would have been, whether it was Hogan or if they had some other guy coming up the pipeline, that would have been money, having Piper as the champion and the babyface chasing him for, you know, however many months until he finally gets the big win. And, I mean, we can make a list and put a lot of other guys on the list as far as guys that maybe should have won the world title and didn't or would have made good world champions in WWF back then. Ted DiBiase would be on that list, Jake Roberts, Rick Rude, some people might say Mr. Perfect. But Piper would be, you know, a number one at the top of that list. And were it not for Hulk Hogan being as hot as he was on top in 84, I think Piper would have been the champion, because who else do you put the title on? If Hogan, you know, broke his leg, or if they didn't have a Hulk Hogan, if they didn't have a babyface that was that huge, the most logical thing to have done would have been to put the championship on your top heel and then throw some guys in his way until you can find that number one guy you want to build around. They already had that number one guy to build around. Hogan had just won the championship at the beginning of that year, and so I guess they didn't want to take the title off him. I don't think there would have been a lot of harm in having Piper beat him for the belt and then have Hogan win it back a few months later, but, you know, business was booming and they were trying to build Hulk Hogan as the next big thing here. I mean, he was already popular and they just made him more popular when he had the exposure. So, you know, Piper unfortunately kind of got the raw end of the deal there, but again, it wasn't like he needed to be champion. He was still one of the most popular guys in the promotion, you know, this hated villain. He was right in the middle of everything with Hogan and Mr. T and Cyndi Lauper and everybody else. But I think Roddy Piper would have made a fantastic heel WWF champion in the mid-80s. It's a real shame it didn't happen. Piper's legacy. I mean, what is there to say? I mean, this guy has done it all. He's been around forever. Everybody knows who he is. He left his mark. I mean, there's no doubt about it. He'll go down as one of the most popular wrestlers ever, anywhere in the world. I don't know, you know, he wouldn't necessarily be number one, but he's in that upper echelon of guys that you look at and you say to yourself, this is one of the greatest of all time. Just like, you know, Dusty Rhodes passed away in June and people said a lot of the same things about him. I would actually argue that Roddy Piper was every bit as, you know, world famous and well known and popular as Dusty Rhodes. I mean, at times maybe Dusty was more so, but when you look at the body of their career, I'm already seeing even more mainstream attention. It's only been about a day, not even a full day since the news broke, you know, as I'm recording this. But everybody, I mean, you talk about, I mean, this is a guy who transcended the wrestling business. I mean, he really did. He's not just, oh, that wrestler died. It's like, holy shit, Roddy Piper died. And everybody from actors to directors, I saw John Carpenter and Darren Aronofsky, you know, made comments about Piper's passing. Sportscasters, athletes, Ronda Rousey, I saw Josh Reddick came to the plate for the A's game last night to Piper's bagpipes. You know, he's a big wrestling fan. I mean, everybody knew who Roddy Piper was, and people are just completely, you know, devastated by this news. And when I say he transcended the wrestling business, you know, what I mean by that is he's not a guy who just had success in wrestling and just couldn't hack it anywhere else. You know, he did movies, he did TV shows. You know, They Live, everyone talks about They Live, and rightfully so. I don't think it was a huge hit when it first came out, but it became this cult classic over the years. I didn't see it until many, many years ago on VHS, and it's one of my favorite movies. Matter of fact, you know, it's funny, I've been meaning to watch it again. I've been saying that since Halloween last year. Like, every Halloween, I try to catch up on a bunch of different horror movies. I usually watch the first Halloween. They Live is usually in the queue, and I never got around to watching it. It's actually, I'm looking at it right now, it's sitting over there, and I've been meaning to watch it, and now I'll finally find time this week to sit down and watch it again. One of the best fight scenes of all time, Roddy Piper and Keith David, in that movie. I think they even recreated it in a video game a few years ago. But again, just, you know, the outpouring of messages on Twitter and Facebook and in the news media, even here locally in New York, it made a lot of the local news. Well, it made Channel 11 because Scott Stanford, you know, works for the station. But, I mean, everybody's talking about this. It's a huge, huge story. He was 15 years old when he made his wrestling debut, his in-ring debut. Very, very young. As the story goes, he played the bagpipes on his way to the ring, which he could do. Piper was a legit bagpipe player. It was not just a gimmick. The gimmick came from the knowledge that, hey, this guy can play the bagpipes pretty good. And they introduced him as Roddy the Piper. And it just ended up becoming Roddy Piper. So that was the origins of the name. I know he wrestled a lot out west in California for a while before he ended up working for Don Owen up in Portland. He always spoke well of Don Owen. Owen treated him very well. I think he considered Owen to be like a father to him. And I think Vince McMahon at one point wanted to run opposition to Owen. I mean, Vince was pretty much running opposition to everybody back then and stomping them all out. And Piper refused to take part. He didn't want to have any part of it. He was that loyal to the guy. The first Starrcade, him and Greg Valentine in that dog collar match, that was where Valentine busted Piper's eardrum with the chain. Piper lost like half his hearing in that ear. That's actually why, you know, when he jumped to the WWF, if you remember, Piper at first was a manager. He really was not wrestling at first, and then they gave him Piper's Pit. They did that because he was still hurt from the ear injury and he couldn't wrestle for a while. And from that, you know, the Piper's Pit, we got the famous Jimmy Snuka coconut smash, which is an all-time famous moment. Piper's Pit became the blueprint for all other wrestling talk shows, which is not to say that they didn't exist before Piper's Pit, because they did. I know even in WWF, they had a, you know, Buddy Rogers had his little Rogers Corner segment for a while. The Snuka one is the most famous, but, you know, it was also Piper's Pit where Andre the Giant turned on Hulk Hogan, challenged him to a match at WrestleMania 3. Or I guess that was where Andre slammed himself in the Pontiac Silverdome. We had the rock and wrestling era, that whole mid-80s period, 84, 85, Cyndi Lauper, Mr. T, the war to settle the score on MTV. Of course, the very first WrestleMania main event. Piper thus becomes the first part of that original WrestleMania main event to pass away. It's pretty amazing that he's the first one after all these years, considering all the other guys that have died. But You have Hogan, you had Mr. T, you had Piper, you had Paul Orndorff, who's still around. You had Jimmy Snuka, who's still around. Muhammad Ali is still around. Pat Patterson. I'm trying to think of everybody who was involved. I guess Billy Martin isn't, but Piper becomes the first, unfortunately, to pass away. And you know what? You know, about that first WrestleMania main event, the whole feud with Hogan and the build-up to it, it is not a stretch to say that Hulk Hogan would not be what he is today if it were not for Roddy Piper. Can't say that for sure. Maybe they try to make Paul Orndorff. I mean, Paul Orndorff, to me, if Piper's not around, Orndorff is probably the number one heel. And they do Hogan-Orndorff. Now, Hogan-Orndorff did big business in 86 when Orndorff turned on Hogan. Because if you remember, it wasn't that long, I don't think, after the WrestleMania main event. Orndorff had a face turn. He was actually teaming with Hogan for a while. They became friends. Orndorff turned on him. And they did big business together. So if Piper isn't around and they push Paul Orndorff as the top heel in the company instead of him, I mean, maybe things go just fine. But Orndorff was not this like bombastic personality that Piper was. I mean, he did not have the charisma of a Roddy Piper. He had charisma, but not the charisma of a Roddy Piper. Nobody did. You know, that's why I say that. I think it was just this perfect storm. All of these different pieces came together at the same time. It was like, you know, dominoes. And if you knock one domino over, the whole thing falls apart. Mr. T. Without Mr. T, that first WrestleMania very likely is a flop. And who the hell knows what happens after that? He was huge. I mean, Mr. T was at, like, the apex of his popularity at that time. He had this big tough guy image. He was one of the biggest stars in all of television. Cyndi Lauper, also a very big part of that rock and wrestling era and that first WrestleMania. Hulk Hogan, right? He was the big champion, the big top babyface. You had to have him in there, but then you had Piper, and you had to have a reason for these guys to feud, and Roddy Piper was awesome at getting people to hate his guts. He was that good, he was that annoying as a villain, and he had this great ability to just get under your skin, and you wanted to see him get his ass kicked so bad. You wanted to see the bigger guy, you wanted to see the champion just wring his neck. So if you take him out of the equation and put somebody else like an Orndorff or another heel in there, look, I can't say for sure, but I think it is safe to say that Roddy Piper had about as much to do with the success, not everything, but a big, big part of the success of that Hulkamania movement in the mid-80s around the time of that first WrestleMania. You know, and both of them. You could say the same thing about Hogan, right? Piper needed this great babyface foil. If you take Hogan out of it, who's the next top babyface in the company at that time? You know, is it Andre? There was no other guy really at Hogan's level at that time as this big star that everybody was kind of rallying around. So it's funny to me to think that whatever heat there may have been between the two of them, whether it came just from Piper or whatever, off and on over the years, their careers really from a very early stage were so linked together that one without the other, I'm not sure that, you know, the other one is as much of a success as they turned out to be. They both turned out to be very, very important to one another's careers over the years. Piper had the retirement match with Adrian Adonis at WrestleMania 3. That was going to be it for him. He was leaving wrestling behind. He was going to go do movies. He did They Live. I think in there he also did Hell Comes to Frogtown. He did that tag team pilot with Jesse Ventura for TV, although that came a few years later. That was in like 90, 91. And I talked about that on the Sound Off. It was probably last year. The pilot episode of that tag team show, I think it was supposed to be on ABC. It was like a buddy cop show. Two wrestlers who are banned from wrestling and they have to go into the real world and get real jobs. It was a completely cheesy premise and a completely cheesy show, but it was also, you know, the 80s. It was also 1990. There was a lot of cheesy stuff on television. It should still be up there. It's either on YouTube or Daily Motion or something. If you put it in, Tag Team Pilot, it should come right up. I'd give it a watch. I would have watched that show. It's a shame it didn't get made. So he was getting involved in all these different things outside of wrestling, and that was his goal. He was going to leave wrestling behind and move on to the next phase of his life. Rarely, if ever, did Piper do clean pinfall jobs, which is, looking back at it, it's amazing he was able to get away with it, but that was his thing. He said, if it doesn't serve me, if it's only going to weaken me, I'm not doing it. And Hulk Hogan, look, everybody lost to Hogan. Hogan beat everybody. The big guys, the little guys, he beat them all. You set him up, he would knock him down. And Piper was like, no, you're not going to play that game with me. So, I mean, Piper would lose by DQ, by countout. They had tons of matches together, but at least on TV, I don't know that Piper did one clean pinfall job at all during that period to Hogan, which is pretty amazing. He came back to the company in 89. He had that Piper's Pit segment with Morton Downey Jr., WrestleMania 5, where he hosed him down with the fire extinguisher, which is another one of those early childhood memories I have. I hated that guy. I was very happy when Piper hosed him down. He stepped in as an announcer when Jesse Ventura had his falling out with Vince in 1990. He left the company, so Piper was kind of put in there. They tried to make him a heel. It didn't really work. I think after a while, Piper just was doing his thing. He really wasn't the heel announcer because it just didn't work. He had a feud with Ric Flair. When Flair came into WWF in 1991, they were clearly building to a Hogan-Flair match. You know, who's the real world's champion? Hogan had the WWF title. Bobby Heenan had brought in the big gold belt that Flair carried everywhere with him, and they would video distort it. But at the same time, he had a little bit of a kind of a mini feud in the background, I guess you can call it, going with Roddy Piper. They never had any big-time matches on, like, a big pay-per-view. They may have had one or two matches that were televised locally from Madison Square Garden. But that was really it. And the two of them, the two of them were best friends, going back to their days working, probably it would have been Mid-Atlantic in the late 70s. So they loved working together, whether they were teaming or against each other. They never got a TV program out of it, although they did. I guess they kind of did many years later. They swapped wives on ABC. But, winning the Intercontinental title in 1992 at the Royal Rumble, which is my all-time favorite pay-per-view, the only championship he ever won his entire run in WWF. It was one of the things I loved about that show. It wasn't just the fact, the Royal Rumble match Ric Flair won. Yeah, that was great. And it's still the greatest Royal Rumble match to this day. It had the added element of having the championship on the line. But one of the things I loved about the Rumble match that year was there were multiple stories going on in that Rumble. It wasn't just about one guy or one feud. Flair was the centerpiece. He came in at number three. And the story was, can he survive until the end? And the story they told was no. Nobody had ever lasted that long before. And of course he did. But you also had Flair and Piper having issues. So remember, in the middle of that Rumble match, after he had already won the championship earlier in the night, the buzzer hits, out comes Piper. And Flair's begging off, and Piper's going nuts on it. It was just a great moment. And the story there was, can Roddy Piper win two championships? He's already the Intercontinental Champion. Can he win the WWF title? And then you had the story with Savage and Jake the Snake. When Savage came out like a madman, he's looking for Jake. Where is he? There were so many great stories and lots of big names in that Rumble match, and that's why so many people look back fondly on that show. But that was a pivotal show in the career for Roddy Piper. I mean, the real success as a top draw, as a main event guy that he had, was in 84, 85, into 86. By 92, he was kind of wrestling part-time and was not at the same level he had been 7 or 8 years earlier, but it was just such a great moment, I think, to see him finally holding a championship, which to him probably meant nothing in terms of his stature. It didn't matter, again, whether or not he had a belt. I mean, maybe he enjoyed the fact that he got it. I'm sure it was, kind of cool for him to be able to have a little bit of a run there with it and to put Bret Hart over, who he thought the world of. They weren't actually related. I mean, they kind of refer to each other as cousins. They weren't actually family, but those two were like brothers. And I'm sure it meant something to Piper to be able to put Bret over and drop the championship to him at WrestleMania that year. My favorite Roddy Piper match, that WrestleMania 8 match against Bret Hart. Again, clean job, a rare clean pinfall job. He did it to Bret Hart, who had been the tag team guy just the year before. Bret was on the ascent. He was trying to get something going. He was trying to up his profile, and here comes Roddy Piper, one of the biggest stars in the last decade, and he puts him over clean as a sheet at WrestleMania. He wouldn't have done that for very many guys. He obviously thought very highly of Brett, thought very highly of Brett's family, and it made for a great match, and it made for a very cool moment. He became the on-screen president for WWF in 1996. If you remember, Vader took out Gorilla Monsoon in that angle. He had been the president on camera, so Piper came back. He was the president there for a couple of months. He had a match with Goldust, the Hollywood Backlot Brawl, WrestleMania 12. That was quite the interesting match, if you could call it that. Had a match with Jerry Lawler at the King of the Ring in 1994. I think the less said about that match, the better. That match sucked. That was just an awful match. And surprising, too. I mean, you would think, you know, two of the best at their craft. I mean, they were two of the best talkers ever, Jerry Lawler and Roddy Piper. Probably the stuff that happened leading up to the match was a lot better than the match itself. But after that, you know, he jumped to WCW in 96, had the feud with Hogan and the NWO, got a rare, clean submission win over Hogan, put Hogan to sleep at Starrcade. Not literally, but in the sleeper hold, he beat him. Everyone thought he had won the championship. I still remember Dusty Rhodes on commentary. I think he even made a comment like, hey, you know, Piper's the new champion, I think, right? Like, even he wasn't sure. Maybe he said something he wasn't supposed to. It was such a messed up thing, because I guess what happened is they never really made it clear leading up to the match that, hey, this is going to be a championship match. But they also didn't say it wasn't going to be a championship match. You got the main event of Starrcade. You assume the champion is going to be defending the title, and obviously the title was not on the line. So anyway, Piper did not win the championship, but he did beat Hogan, and that was a big deal. But I could see why people might feel ripped off by that. I guess in Hogan's mind, just doing the job was a big deal. Him giving up the title would be asking too much. Came back to WWE, Piper did, in 2003. Did the surprise run-in in the Hogan-Vince match at WrestleMania that year. Hit Hogan in the head with a pipe. And then they hooked Piper up with Sean O'Hare. And he really fucked up O'Hare's push. Not that he intended to, but what happened was, right after that, he gave an interview to HBO for their Real Sports show. And they must have been doing... I guess the story must have been about all the wrestlers that were dying young, because Piper just went to this dark place in this interview. And he talked about all of his friends are dead, all the young wrestlers, all the young guys who have died. And WWE fired him right after. And when they fired him, that was the end of Sean O'Hare's big push. Wasn't his fault at all. He just got caught in the crossfire. Came back in 2005 to be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. I think it was the year after that that he and Ric Flair became the tag team champions. And it's such a great story because... And Piper said this himself, the fans helped save his life. This was when they were doing those Cyber Sunday pay-per-views. They had the fans vote for who they wanted to see team up with Ric Flair. They were going to go for the tag team titles. And the fans picked Piper. I don't remember who the other two guys were. I think one of them may have been Sergeant Slaughter. I don't remember. But they voted for Piper. And they ended up winning the tag team titles. And so they go on this tour of Europe. And Piper starts having some health problems. I think it was some problems with his legs. They fly him back to the States, and that's when they find out that he has cancer. He had Hodgkin's lymphoma. And were it not for the fans voting him in, there's a very good chance that Roddy Piper, he don't live to see 61. And I don't know if I've ever talked about this on the show before, but when I found out that Piper had lymphoma, lymphoma is a type of blood cancer. This all happened about 2 years after my mother was diagnosed with leukemia. Leukemia is also a blood cancer. So I knew all about this stuff. I mean, I was living it at that time. And I remember reading that people who wanted to send letters to Piper could do so. He set up like a P.O. box and you can mail him some letters. So I wrote him a letter. I wrote Roddy Piper a letter. I wish I still had a copy of it. I checked. I can't find it anywhere. But I just wanted to relay my own family story to him and just let him know that, hey, you're going to beat this thing. You know, this was before Twitter. Now you could just send a tweet to the person, 140 characters, and boom, you're done. Back in the old days, right, the old days of 2006, you actually had to type letters and put this thing on it called a stamp and mail it out. And it just, I don't know, it really hit home for me when I found out what kind of cancer he had, and I just said, you know, I have to write him a letter and just, you know, tell this guy to kick ass and he'll beat it. I think I even used that line, you know, kick ass and chew bubblegum, which I'm sure is something that nobody else has ever said to him before. So, but I, what the hell, I thought it was an appropriate line to use. Piper had come back for sporadic appearances over the years on Raw, mostly. It was mostly Piper's Pit segments. The one where he told John Cena, you know, don't spit in my face, John Cena. I just thought that was fantastic. I think that was before Survivor Series a few years ago. Piper could be very hit or miss these days. You never really knew what Piper you were going to get. If he showed up and he was on his A game, he was better than anybody on the current roster. That's how good he still could be. They did the deal last year. Remember, Hulk Hogan had his little birthday celebration. He won't be having one this year. I know his birthday's coming up on the 11th. I don't think they'll be throwing him another birthday party this time. But they did that last year. Brock Lesnar, you know, went over to Hulk and said, hey, party's over, Grandpa. And Lesnar was eyeballing each of the legends in the ring. Piper was one of them, and he got up in Piper's face, and Piper stood up to him. He stood up to Brock Lesnar. He was on that first season of Legends House. Him and Hacksaw Jim Duggan were roommates on the show. I feel really bad for Hacksaw, because I know the two of them became really good friends. I think he had Duggan even on his podcast a few times. They were really just very tight, especially after that. Maybe you know, drop Hacksaw a note on Twitter. You know, cheer him up a little bit. I'm sure he's devastated by all this. And there's one really, really sad segment. I found it on YouTube. I forgot about it. It was from the final episode of Legends House. They did this thing where each guy, like the limo would pull up. It was their ride. And each guy would leave the house one by one. And it just so happened, the final two guys in the house were Hacksaw Jim Duggan and Roddy Piper. So they're kind of milling around. And then, you know, Duggan's ride comes and he puts his jacket on and they hug. And it was a really sad moment. Because Piper was just, I don't know, Piper was all messed up by this. He was like, oh man, you know, this was my family, and now the family is breaking up. And he was really sad to see Duggan go, because they had really bonded, I guess, over the course of filming the show. So now it's just Roddy Piper, left in this house all by himself, and the camera's following him around. He's just walking around. He doesn't really know what to do with himself. And I guess Piper knew how to play the piano. They show him playing the piano. And there's a comment that he makes, and he talks about why he's so sad, and he says, all of us, everybody who was on the show, Tony Atlas, Hillbilly Jim, everybody who was part of that show, kind of being together in the house like that, he said, I know that all of us together will never be in the same place together again. And it just hit me right, you know, it hits you right in the feels when you watch that. It's like, oh man, it's just, ugh. It sucks. It really fucking sucks. A lot of people, and Duggan's not the only one. I mean, a lot of people are really devastated by this. It's a massive loss. I mean, that's what it is. You know, Piper was one of a kind. There never has been another Roddy Piper. There were some guys who have flashes of Piper. I think some people said that about Brian Pillman when he went all nutty. Some people have said that about Dean Ambrose, and I'm sure it was a thrill for Ambrose to work with Piper, one of the last segments he ever did on TV. I don't think it was the last Piper's Pit. I think the last Piper's Pit actually had Rusev and Lana, but I know there was a Piper's Pit with the members of the Shield, and I remember Ambrose and Piper face-to-face, jaw-jacking back and forth, and that had to be a thrill for Ambrose. There's a lot of people who make comparisons between Ambrose and Piper, and that's a compliment. But is Dean Ambrose Roddy Piper? Of course not. There is no other Roddy Piper. Roddy Piper was a one-of-a-kind performer. That's what made him special. He stood out. There's nobody like him. There's nobody that's got a mouth on them like he did. And it's just a massive, massive loss for wrestling. Like I said before, you know, my all-time favorite Piper match was the match with Bret at Mania 8. But my all-time favorite Roddy Piper memory, if I had to pick one, probably the moment he put the Mountie to sleep. And the referee called for the bell, and the place just exploded once they realized what had just happened. And they hand him the Intercontinental title, and he just looks like the happiest guy in the world. I mean, he was jumping up and down. He was so excited that he just won this championship, and he holds the title up above his head. That, to me, is the singular image of Roddy Piper that I will remember him for, because of just how freaking happy he was and how happy the crowd was and what a big moment it was to finally see him win a championship. which is really what wrestling, for the fans anyway, I mean, it's really what wrestling's all about, at least when you're a kid, right? You're, oh, he won a title, like, it's such a big deal. And it felt like, on some level to him, it was kind of a big deal, too, and it was just such a happy moment. That's how I choose to remember him. And hopefully this is the last segment like this, of this kind, that I have to do for a long, long time. It'd be kind of nice to get through the rest of the year, at least, without having to talk about this kind of stuff. So hopefully we won't have to do that. I did want to say thank you to everybody for all the positive feedback to the segment on Hulk Hogan last week. Again, something else I wish I didn't have to talk about with all that racial stuff, but sometimes you talk about stuff that you'd rather not have to talk about. This week, I think, is a prime example of that. So if you missed it, I also put the segment up on our YouTube channel. I mean, you can just go back in the archives and listen to episode 393, but the Hogan segment is up on YouTube if you want to take a peek at that. We also smashed our all-time Audible sign-up record in the month of July, so thank you for that as well. Lots of people taking advantage of our link to get the new Daniel Bryan book for free. audibletrial.com/solomonster. You could sign up for a 30-day trial of the service. You can pick any book on there that you like, and you get to keep it, even if you cancel within those 30 days. The Bryan book is one of the ones that you can choose from, and it even has narration from the man himself. So take advantage. audibletrial.com/solomonster. Also, if you'd like to make a PayPal donation to the podcast, you may do so on thesolomonster.com. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out. $30 or more will get you a shout-out and a quick plug for your own podcast or YouTube channel. Thank you very much to Out of Control Cody Thomas, Zach House of Pain Hulker, who turns 19 on Sunday, so happy birthday, Zach. Zach's the one who also runs our Royal Rumble pool every January, so big thank you to him for that. Time Bomb Thomas Adams, and actually his birthday is coming up on Tuesday. So, happy birthday, buddy. And Dead to Rights, Daniel Brame. Thank you all for donating to the podcast. Let's get into all the other news here. There is a lot of other news to discuss here. Layla announced her retirement this past week from WWE. Aside from that brief stint that she had all those months ago with Fandango, which was a total fail. I mean, the two of them just did not make a good pairing. They just had no chemistry. Aside from that, she really hadn't been on TV much at all for a while now. I think she just announced that she got engaged, so I'm sure that had something to do with it. She's getting married to the rally towel guy from the ECW brand. That's literally the only thing I remember about the guy. I don't even remember his name. She had a nice career for herself. You know, she was a dancer when she first tried out for the Diva Search in 2006. She ended up winning the Diva Search. Probably the biggest thing that she was ever involved in, I guess, was the whole Lay Cool thing with Michelle McCool, and they were, I think they shared a tag team title or something. They, like, split it in half or something goofy like that. She did win the women's title. She won the women's title once and the Divas title once. She had maybe the worst theme song in the history of theme songs. If you don't believe me, go back and listen to me reciting those awful lyrics on Sound Off 235. I would rather listen to Samoa Joe's first NXT theme on a loop for a week than be subjected to that again. I never hated Layla, but she also, yeah, she didn't really do anything for me, you know, in the ring. I was always kind of in the middle on her. I wish her well. Hopefully she is as happy as McCool and some of the other divas that have retired and have not looked back. You know, Maryse went and opened her own jewelry business. Eve got married to Henner Gracie. I think she teaches self-defense. I think she's having a kid. Trish Stratus had a kid. She's doing her yoga thing. See, there is life outside of WWE. There is life after WWE. Even if WWE doesn't always want you to think there is. WWE released its quarterly earnings this week. I won't bore you with all the different financial numbers, but some of the more interesting numbers to come out of this. The network, as of June 30th, had a little over 1.1 million subscribers, which is down from 1.3 million at the end of the first quarter. When I did the prediction show for this year, didn't I predict 1.1 million is what they would end the year with? I think I did. We've got another 4 months to go, so it could go up. I would expect it to go up at least a little bit, but I don't know. I don't know. I don't think they're going to end that much higher than that, so I may have nailed it pretty much on that one. 939,000 of that, by the way, was U.S., 217,000 international, so still under a million domestic. Beast in the East was the most watched non-pay-per-view program in the history of the WWE Network, so they're definitely going to do more of those shows. I mean, we already knew that. I saw in this week's Observer newsletter they're looking at doing a live event on a beach, similar to the first Bash at the Beach that WCW did. I love it. I hope they do it. That's the sort of thing they need to do more of. Those spring break specials that WCW used to do back in the day, those were a lot of fun. They have to do stuff in that same vein. By the way, speaking of the Beast, WWE is coming back to Madison Square Garden 3 days before my birthday for a house show, and they have announced that Brock Lesnar will be making his first appearance at Madison Square Garden since the match with Goldberg, that infamous match with Goldberg at WrestleMania 20. So I guess part of his new contract was to make appearances at some of the big house shows. So he's going to be at the Garden on October 3rd. I got the pre-sale code. I took a look. I was going to make it like a little birthday gift to myself, but I'm not spending $100 at a house show ticket. Get the fuck out of here. And I'm not sitting all the way up in the boondocks either. So who knows? Maybe that'll end up being a network special. They're also working on new programming for the network, including a reality show that follows the NXT stars, which sounds pretty cool. A studio news show, which I think was in their plans from the get-go, and then they abandoned it. They were cutting costs. I think that might have been what they were going to bring Jonathan Coachman in to do. Coach was all gung-ho about coming back to WWE. He was still going to be with ESPN, but he was going to be doing something for them on the network, and then he was kind of pissed because they weren't. So I don't know if this still involves him or not, but they're going to be doing a studio news show, I think every day. No idea when these are coming, but on the flip side, even though it was one of their better performing shows, apparently Swerved has been canceled because a lot of the talent complained about it. Now, this is not something that WWE itself has confirmed. They haven't confirmed that the show is gone, but they're also not denying it. You would think that, and this was all over social media, you would think that if the show was gone and it wasn't, they would come out and say, hey, listen, that's not true. Swerved is coming back. It's going to have a second season. They have not done that. In fact, people were tweeting the WWE Network. They have like a help Twitter account set up, and people have been tweeting it left and right, and they've been very vague. So it's possible that maybe it's not official, but it's kind of on the chopping block. It sounds like it's gone. I enjoyed most of the episodes that I've seen. You know, it is a stupid show, but, you know, it could still be entertaining. I thought the last episode sucked, but I've enjoyed it for the most part, so that's kind of a bummer. Look, I get it. I'm not going to rant and rave, oh, this is so stupid. Listen, these guys are on the road. They're sore. They're tired. They've got cameras following them everywhere they go as it is. Now they got to worry about being pranked all the time. You know, they got to walk around on eggshells constantly. They already do enough walking around on eggshells for other reasons. So I get it. It is what it is. The only comment Vince McMahon made with this whole conference call stuff, he did get asked about Hulk Hogan. He said that Hogan was in no way associated with the company anymore. He would rather focus on guys who can actually perform in the ring. So a nice little parting fuck you to the Hulkster from Vince McMahon. It's going to be very interesting to see how they handle the Roddy Piper tributes on Monday night with all the old footage, because how can they not talk about the first WrestleMania main event without mentioning or showing Hulk Hogan? It's almost impossible. I mean, they'll find a way, but it's crazy. They have to. They have to bring him up, especially when you consider that Hogan was one of, if not the greatest rival that Roddy Piper ever had. How can you not mention the guy? So it'd be very interesting to see how they handle that. I want to talk about Tough Enough. I have a few things to say about this show. This was the week that Tough Enough jumped the shark. Not only did Tough Enough jump the shark, as it jumped over the shark, it took a spear and drove it down right through the shark's heart. His little shark heart bleeding into the ocean. The shark is now dead. That's how badly they jumped the shark with this show. So, a couple of things here. They had Tamina, Naomi, and Sasha Banks in studio. Now, the week before, they had the Big Show, and they did a chopping contest where the Big Show took some, like three or four of the male contestants. He pulled up their shirt, and he chopped them in the chest. And I let that slide, because some of the guys sold, some of the guys didn't. They kind of laughed it off. Okay, whatever. So they have Team Bad on this show. This time they're going to work with the women, who are probably even more clueless than the guys are. And what they're going to do is they're going to have Tamina snooka splash them from the top rope. And Tamina climbs to the top. She did this like four times, mind you. Okay, she was getting tired by the end. And her microphone was coming out the back, the crack of her ass. I mean, this was quite the scene here. So she gives these women a superfly splash. And I would say that all but like one, maybe, laughed it off. This woman came off the top rope from a great height and splashed these women, and they laugh it off. And this is her finishing move, no less. Not that it matters, it's Tamina, but still. Yeah, I let it slide with the Big Show chop stuff last week. And I know that a lot of them are very inexperienced. They're not wrestling fans, or if they do, they don't know. Oh, you should sell it and whatever. It probably helps their chances, too, by the way. You know, if they actually sell that the move actually hurts, that's kind of the point. But, yeah, and it's not their fault. It's WWE's fault. They put this stuff out there. I'm just watching this going, are you out of your mind? What is this? What is this nonsense? And then they had a hot tub scene. So when they go back to all the pre-recorded footage from the barracks and the challenges and all this, they put a hot tub in the house because, hey, I guess every fucking reality show now has to have a hot tub. Which, by the way, I don't watch a lot of reality television, but I would think if there is hot tub action going on a lot of those shows, it's a hell of a lot better than what we get on this show. I don't even know why they have one. It's completely useless. So they have Tanner and Chelsea. They're kind of building something up on the show between them. You have to see this scene. You have to watch this episode for this scene, if nothing else. This had to be the worst scene involving a hot tub in the history of television or cinema. That's how bad this was. I wish that I could put them in a hot tub time machine and send them away so I don't have to watch them anymore. This was awful. But that wasn't even the worst of it. So we get to the end of the show. And it's my own fault. I know this whole show is all bullshit. I'm probably taking the show more seriously than I should. But I'm trying to give it a shot. I like some of the people on the show. I'd love for whoever wins the show to actually go on to do something meaningful. Wouldn't that be nice? So I'm watching this show, and it comes down to the bottom three. And the bottom three this week are Amanda, who's the blonde with the collagen lips, okay? Mata, who, if you remember last week when I did the mid-season Tough Enough evaluation, Mata, I said if I had to pick two people who I think should win the show, it would be Mata and Gigi. I think they're the two who have the most appeal. They're the two who, if push comes to shove, you got to put them on TV and do something with them in 6 months. They're the two who are the most well-equipped to actually go on TV and look like actual pro wrestlers. Even though it would probably end up being ZZ and Sarah Lee. But who do I think should win? Mata and Gigi. So Mata is in the bottom three. And I wish I remember. I don't even remember who put him in the bottom three. It might have been Miz. It might have been that son of a bitch Miz who put him in the bottom three. So ZZ, of course, as always, I mean, he makes the bottom three every single week. So it's ZZ, Mata, and Amanda. And they have their final pleas. And Mata's final plea was awesome. I mean, this guy, he didn't belong in the bottom three anyway. But if there was any doubt about it, he cut this passionate promo. You think to yourself, there's no way this guy's getting cut. So then they open it up to a fan vote. They come back from commercial. They put the results up on the screen. And there it is, with the highest percentage of the fan vote, of course, ZZ, almost 50% of the vote. Mata, 39%, and Amanda, 13%. Now, let me back up a little bit here, because if you remember, the judges each have one save that they can use for the season. Hulk Hogan is gone. They filled his spot with The Miz, who has been awesome on Tough Talk. I have praised The Miz. I liked The Miz on Tough Talk. I said, this guy has found his niche. He's not annoying. He fits in. He's a former contestant on the show. It makes total sense for him to be involved. And they slotted him in as a judge. I think it might just be for this past week only. They almost made it sound like there may be a rotating panel for that third judging spot. I'm not sure. I certainly hope so after this week. but it was Miz, Paige, and Daniel Bryan. I have no issue with Daniel Bryan. Paige, very annoying, but she wasn't even the issue this week. The Miz used his save, his very first show, maybe his only one. He used his save not to save Mata, but to save Amanda. Now, why did he use his save to save Amanda? Because he thinks Amanda has made tremendous progress, and Amanda is one of the best female athletes on the show. Her promos maybe are great. No, he saved Amanda because, and I quote, she's hot. That was his criteria for saving her. She's hot. The Miz should not even be allowed to judge a fucking spelling bee. He shouldn't be allowed to judge a wet t-shirt contest, let alone a reality show competition. That decision alone should get him bounced from the show. Should get him bounced from the company. So Amanda was saved. Okay, she wasn't going to get bounced from the show no matter what. Of course, she got the lowest vote, which meant the fans didn't want her there anymore. But since she got saved, and ZZ got the most votes, poor Mata was eliminated. And this guy was shell-shocked. I felt so bad for this guy. Because he was likable. You learn to like the guy. He just worked his ass off. He was probably the most impressive guy left. Certainly one of the most impressive guys left on that show. Seemed to have a lot of the stuff that they would be looking for. You know, he was picking up all the drills and stuff. So he seemed to be, you know, his working seemed to be fine. And his promos were probably better than anybody else on the show. He had a unique look. Big guy. Little mohawk down the head. Had a great story about where he came from. Family Guy's got a kid back at home. I mean, all those elements that you would look for in somebody, this guy had it. But The Miz saved Amanda. She's hot. Obviously, The Miz has a thing for blondes. I wonder what Maryse thought about this whole thing. What a dumb shit. What a joke of a show. I almost feel stupid for even wasting time with that evaluation last week. This whole show just pissed me off this week. I mean, I'm going to give it a shot because I've been watching now for, what, like 6 weeks? I feel like I want to try to stick it out until the end. They're not making this easy, let me tell you. I could have come up with any number of guys that could have plugged into that spot, and I guarantee you the outcome would have been a lot different. Put Vince McMahon in the spot. I think that's a hell of an idea. It's all about what Vince wants anyway, right? There are rumors that Vince likes Josh. Well, if Vince likes Josh, then guess what? Josh is going to get a contract. Show over. I mean, why even have these last 4 weeks or 3 weeks or however many weeks are left? Why not put Vince out there? You want ratings? You want to bring up the Tough Enough ratings? Then put Vince McMahon in there as a third judge. You get one male wrestler, one female wrestler, and the boss. Nobody knows what they're looking for more than the boss. You'd only have to be on there for a couple of weeks anyway. You could have put a fucking chinchilla in that spot, and he would have been a better judge than The Miz. All right, I'm going to calm down now. I had an intro I had already put together before the Piper stuff broke. I was going to use that at the beginning of the show. That's a little funny thing. Kind of plays into what I'm going to talk about here from Raw Monday night. So instead of it going to waste, I figure may as well play it now. So here is what would have been the intro for this week's episode.
How tough is John Cena? How tough is Cena?
John Cena is one tough son of a bitch. John Cena is one tough son of a bitch.
And Stone Cold Steve Austin is the toughest son of a bitch I ever saw to overcome this.
All right, Raw was live from Oklahoma City this past Monday night. They announced that SummerSlam is going to be a four-hour event this year. Technically five, if you count the pre-show at 6 p.m. I assume they'll have one or two matches, so it's a five-hour show. They are trying to make it the WrestleMania of the summer, which, if that's the case, they need to spend some money and create a custom stage for this show. I'm sorry. I mean, this enough's enough. I'm tired of these lazy setups they have for all the pay-per-views now. They have no identity. They're all the same. They all look the same. This one should have a Brooklyn theme. Whatever that is. You want to have a graffiti wall? You want to have cop cars riding by? You know, whatever stereotype of Brooklyn people may have. Make it fun. Make it interesting. Do something. I'm begging you. It also sounds like plans have changed, and Sting will not be wrestling on this show, even though he is being advertised for a signing with Shawn Michaels that week in New York. It might be in Brooklyn, I think. They're having all these superstar signings, and Sting is going to be there. I did think it was very odd when they mentioned that on Monday night during the show, they mentioned that Sting would be signing, and tickets were going to go on sale this past weekend. You would think if Sting was coming back, they wouldn't mention his name at all, and they would kind of let it be a surprise. So that kind of made me go, huh, that's interesting. And then these reports start spreading that, in fact, plans have changed, even though Sting was under the impression he was wrestling and training to wrestle and had gotten himself in pretty damn good shape. He is not slotted in on the show. Hopefully they'll find a spot for him. But at the same time, if you're just going to shoehorn Sting into something, like, I don't want to see Sting against Bo Dallas or something stupid like that. Nor do I want to see Sting involved in this whole Stardust, Green Arrow, comic book nonsense. Sting shouldn't be involved in that either. If they can't come up with something good for him, I guess leave him off the show. But, it's kind of a bummer. I think that would have made the show that much more special. I got an email from Kevin, one of our listeners, who had this to say about Raw from Monday night. 33 times he heard Michael Cole, Byron Saxton, JBL, or The Authority say the words, "first time ever." 33 times. It's very impressive. 20 of which came in the first hour alone. They sure do know how to beat something to death. I will say that. If that's the case, maybe they can pay that scumbag dentist in Minnesota a visit. We had Dean Ambrose against The Big Show for the first time ever, which absolutely doesn't feel like a first time ever match. I mean, who among us heard that and thought to themselves, wow, I can't wait to see that match, or wow, that's a match we've never seen before. The first thought I had was, bullshit. I feel like I've seen that match a gazillion times. The only thing is, I haven't. I think it actually is the first time these two are having, or did have, a singles match on television. It only felt that way because we've probably seen them in some tag team match of some kind, 3-on-3, 2-on-2, God knows how many times over the years. And to them, this is a first time ever big time match. Ooh, Dean Ambrose and The Big Show. But that's the problem when you have the same faces. Not even Ambrose, I'm talking Big Show. Big Show's been around a lot longer than Ambrose. But it's the same faces in the same spots over and over and over and over and over again. And you put these guys in tag team matches, I mean, do they not count? It all kind of blends together. So when they say that, my immediate reaction is, you're full of shit. Even if they're not full of shit. Because it feels like I've seen this match a gazillion times before. So they had a match. Big Show won by countout, which would not be the only questionable booking decision on this show. We had Randy Orton against Kevin Owens for the first time ever. These guys went face-to-face before the match, and my God, did Randy Orton tower over Kevin Owens. He looked like a giant next to this guy. And it's not even so much that Kevin Owens is so small. It's Randy Orton. You know, we see Orton so many times around guys like Big Show and Kane for how many years now. I think it's easy to forget that Orton is a tall dude. I mean, he's like 6'4", 6'5". He's a big guy. So this ended by DQ, and Sheamus, who was doing commentary, attacked Orton from behind. I read that Kevin Owens lost to Chris Jericho at a house show the other day. Not that this matters, but the losing streak continues for Kevin Owens. Paige and Sasha Banks, for the first time ever on Raw, and that's true. On Raw, it is the first time ever, although it's not the first match they've ever had. They did wrestle last year on NXT, and that was a very different Sasha Banks than the one we see today. This Sasha Banks, I talked her up last week. I'm going to do it again. Sasha Banks is the total package. She can work. She can talk. She's got the looks. And the biggest thing I think I love about Sasha is the fact that she's a real fan. She's been a fan her whole life. She wasn't picked out of some modeling catalog. She didn't win a reality show. She's not clumsy, but, ooh, I'll learn it. I'll get to learn it over time. Like, no, she's wanted to be a wrestler her entire life. She did an interview with Sam Roberts a few months ago. I want to say this may have actually been before, I think NXT had like a house show loop in Ohio maybe, or they were in Philly. And wherever they were interviewing Sasha. He interviewed her for like half an hour. And in the interview, she mentioned that Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit were two of her biggest influences. I mean, come on. This girl is the real deal. And as young as she is, I really think, you know, she could end up going down as one of the greatest female wrestlers of all time. I mean, it's way too early to say for sure, but she's got all the tools, and she's got plenty of years to make it happen. I really believe she has that potential. She made Paige tap to the bank statement, 13 minutes, 52 seconds, which is a long time for a Divas match on Raw, to get almost 14 minutes. They had a Divas tag match later on in the night. Becky Lynch submitted Alicia Fox about 6 minutes, so they gave the women combined another 20 minutes this week. See, it's like baby steps. So far, so good. Now the next thing they need to try to do is give them some more promo time. Alicia suffered a concussion in that tag team match, by the way, so there's no word on how long she may be out for. We had Rusev giving gifts, lavishing gifts upon Summer Rae, including a dog. He gave her a dog. I guess it was a puppy. It looked too big to be a puppy to me, but I'm not the dog expert here. But he gave her a dog, and they were trying to come up with a name for it. And Rusev's suggestion was, let's call it Dog Ziggler. And then after that, he gave Summer Rae a box and told her to open the box, and she did. And inside the box was a decapitated fish that Rusev suggested they name Lana. Since, much like Lana, it is a cold fish. And Rusev. Yes. Rusevov. That's Andre. That was Andre the Giant's last name, Andre Rusevov. No, Rusev was greatly amused by this joke that he just told, referring to Lana as a cold fish. If you are not following Rusev on Twitter, you need to start doing that right now. He has become the most entertaining guy, I think, on the entire roster. He's great. As stupid as this whole angle has been at times, I mean, Rusev has just been knocking it out of the park. I know he's not this undefeated killer that he was before. We all knew once he, you know, faced John Cena, that was the end of the whole unbeatable killer gimmick. It was just a matter of, okay, is he going to be on TV? Is he going to be relegated to main event? Is he going to be doing jobs? He's not doing jobs. I mean, he lost to Cesaro on SmackDown a few weeks ago. Cesaro was only the second person to pin Rusev, which is more impressive for Cesaro than anything else. Unfortunately, if it happened on SmackDown, it didn't happen. So they haven't really mentioned that fact on TV too much. I think they may have mentioned it on Monday night. I don't remember. But Rusev has just been fantastic in this. I don't even know how you would jealous boyfriend, I guess. That's probably not even the right way to describe it. Clearly, I would think the end result is going to be him and Lana reuniting, maybe his baby faces. I hope so. I think that's what I had suggested weeks ago, and it looks to me like that's the direction it's probably going in. I mean, everything Rusev does, he's clearly doing it with the intent of making Lana jealous. I don't see Dolph and Lana being a long-term thing. And if they reunite, I would rather them reunite as a babyface team, because I think there's actually some mileage in Rusev now as a babyface. People seem to be cheering him a little bit more each week. So I guess we'll see what direction they decide to take this in. But I think I was sold on Rusev the minute he stumbled over his words and called Kevin Owens a French-American. I think that's what did it. So Lana came out. She rubbed Summer's face in the fish. I think she slapped Rusev, walked out. Rusev picked up the dead fish, the dead decapitated fish, and threw it at her. He chucked the fish into the aisle. And some of the guts actually splattered on the ground when it landed. A very bizarre segment, entertaining purely because of Rusev. We had the main event. John Cena defending the United States Championship against the WWE Champion, Seth Rollins. Only the U.S. title was on the line in this match. Cena got his nose broken, knee to the face. I don't know whose fault it was, if it was Rollins for throwing the knee, if it was Cena for turning into it. Whoever's fault it was, Cena got fucked up badly by this knee. But he finished the match. His nose looked awful. it looked like it was on the side of his face. and it started to swell, and it was bleeding, and the doctor went in and tried to clean it up. Cena insisted they finish the match. He even took a superplex off the top rope, which I'm sure did not feel good upon landing. His whole face probably didn't feel too good. But he finished the match, and he beat Seth Rollins by submission with the STF. Now, to be fair, this was probably the best STF I have seen this guy do in years. After how many times have I pointed out how weak the move looked? Not only that, the springboard stunner that he busted out looked a little bit better than it's looked of late. But the STF, he cranked back on it, and Rollins immediately tapped out, and John Cena retained the championship. First of all, much respect to John Cena for wrestling with his nose practically on the side of his face. It was a nasty injury. I saw the report from WrestleZone, I think it was, that Cena had to undergo emergency surgery on Tuesday to fix some breathing problems he was having. The injury is so bad, he may still have to have reconstructive surgery to fix it. When they call this guy the face of the company, they really mean that. He really is the face of the company, and that face is all fucked up right now. You know, he's got a movie out right now. There's another movie coming out in December. If he wants to make more of them, he can't very well be walking around with his nose all crooked and deformed. He's going to have that fixed, and if he does, he could be out for many, many weeks. So right now, they've taken him off the house shows this weekend. He's off Raw this Monday. I don't know if that means off the show altogether, if he'll be there for a promo. Remember, there was a time, I think it might have been last year, where Cena got a black eye. He got his eye all busted up in a house show match, and the eye was so bad they didn't even want to put him on TV because he's the face of the company, and that face was all messed up. So even for a promo, they would not put him on television. They kept him off TV for a week until the eye looked a little bit better. That's their mentality. So if his nose is all messed up and he's all bandaged up and he's probably got some swelling under the eyes, I don't think they're going to put him on the show at all. They probably don't want people to see that. So as of right now, he's off the show on Monday. There's a tour coming up of Australia. They've taken him off the Australia tour. They replaced him with Cesaro, which is pretty cool for Cesaro when you're tapped as the replacement for John Cena. So I guess it'll be Cesaro wrestling Kevin Owens overseas. We've got 3 weeks until SummerSlam. I have little doubt that John Cena will be on that show. This is the same John Cena who tore his pec and was back 3 months later. The same John Cena who had neck surgery and was back 3 months later. He's not going to need 3 months to fix a broken nose. He'll wear that old Phantom of the Opera mask that The Undertaker wore all those years ago if he has to. John Cena will wrestle Seth Rollins at SummerSlam. I would be stunned if it happened any other way. I guess WWE could be overly cautious. They're a little more cautious about injuries now. I mean, that's more concussions. But I guess if WWE put their foot down and said, hey, we're not going to clear you, then I guess John Cena wouldn't be wrestling. But I would be absolutely stunned if he was not at least back in time to wrestle at SummerSlam. So the people all getting excited here, ooh, John Cena may not wrestle at SummerSlam. Don't get your hopes up so fast. Because if history is any indication, a broken nose will not put John Cena out for more than a couple of weeks. But I have to mention this. Let's just talk first before I get to what I want to talk about. The booking. The end of the match. I agree. Incredibly dumb. I just don't like the idea of having the world champion just, you know, beaten clean on TV by pin or submission. I just think it's stupid. I just think there are very, very rare times it should happen. This was not one of them. Now, the explanation that they could use, and it looks like they already are, based on what Rollins, I guess, said in his promo on SmackDown, is that he has more important things to worry about than the U.S. title. And you can use the idea that, hey, he was caught, he knew he was caught, he didn't want to get hurt, his title wasn't on the line, John Cena's title was the only one that was up for grabs, and so live to fight another day. Because once Cena cranked it in, he was tapping pretty quick. So in that respect, if you want to make the excuse, there's your excuse. I still think this whole thing was stupid. I think the idea of Seth Rollins, the visual of this guy tapping out for the first time since WrestleMania here on Raw to John Cena was just dumb and not something that should have happened. That's not even my real issue here. And this tends to happen whenever John Cena gets hurt. Because I know I've ranted about this on the show before, and I'm going to again. John Cena had his nose really badly injured on Monday night. And almost immediately, you had people coming out of the woodwork, Twitter, Facebook, maybe even on other podcasts, I don't know. Coming out of the woodwork, talking about how, oh, it's just a broken nose, it's not a big deal. The announcers are talking about how tough he is, and I will admit the announcers went overboard because that's what they do. Of course they go overboard. You would listen to the announcing on Monday night, you would think that John Cena had suffered some kind of paralysis. His spine was severed, and he fought back from it, or something miraculous like that. They take things too far. They do that every week. Okay, this is not news. But there were other people saying, oh, thank God, John Cena's hurt. That means he won't be able to go to SummerSlam, and maybe they'll put Cesaro in there with Seth Rollins, or they'll make it a three-way with Cesaro and Owens and Rollins, and somebody else will get a shot. They were taking pleasure in the fact that this guy was hurt. They were celebrating the fact that John Cena was injured. And I know I've said it before, and I'll say it again, these people have shit for brains. Because to celebrate anybody getting hurt in the ring is stupid. There is never a good time to say, hey, I'm happy this guy got hurt. Or, pop the cork, so-and-so got hurt. There are times when if Cena or somebody gets hurt, and it forces somebody else into that spot, gives somebody else a chance, it could turn into a positive thing. But you'll never hear me, like on this show, go, thank God John Cena broke his nose. That fucker, I can't stand him. But there were people, and believe me, there were people saying far worse than that, taking actual pleasure in the fact that this guy had his nose shattered in the middle of the ring, as though, and here's the thing that really gets me. You know it's a personal thing between them and Cena. It's just pure Cena hatred. Because if they actually used the shit floating around in their heads, because like I said, they have shit for brains. If that shit could be used, okay, let's think about this here. And they tried really, really hard, and they thought about this, they would realize that it doesn't mean anything. The fact that he is hurt, if he misses SummerSlam, it doesn't mean anything in the long run. Because John Cena will be back in that spot just as soon as he is ready to get back in the ring. Nothing will change. Not only that, John Cena and this whole open challenge thing has been the consistently most entertaining thing on Raw ever since WrestleMania. Some are better than others. Not every week is a winner. But for the most part, it has been consistently the most entertaining thing on 3 hours of Raw. It is the best thing they have done with John Cena in years. It is the most interested in John Cena I have been in years. And we've gotten a lot of kick-ass matches out of it. Now, you could argue, oh, he shouldn't have beaten this guy. I wish this guy would have won. I mean, look, at least they tried to protect guys like Neville. I mean, you look at it now, Neville's feuding with frickin' Stardust. So what did it really mean? But, overall, they've done a good job with it. And they built the U.S. title up to actually be something. I mean, fuck, the U.S. champion beat the WWE champion on Monday night. If that doesn't tell you which title has more cachet right now, I don't know what does. But the open challenges have been a bright spot on an otherwise boring show. It is a struggle most weeks to stay awake watching this show because of how freaking long it is. And because of the booking. It's not just the fact that it's 3 hours. I mean, if they gave us an entertaining 3-hour show, I wouldn't fall asleep. It's hard. So when Cena does the open challenge stuff and he has a match with somebody maybe he hasn't wrestled before, I'm interested. They go out there for 10, 15, 20 minutes, have a kick-ass match. I appreciate that. At least I feel like I'm getting something out of this show. Now that he's hurt, he may not be getting an open challenge for a while. And that makes Raw a worse show. Raw is worse off without the open challenge. Now, I don't know what that says about the rest of the booking on the show. That, the Cena thing is probably the best thing on the entire show, but that's how it is. So, are you happy that we're not going to get any more open challenge matches? Do you really want more John Cena promos? Is that what you want? Because even if they keep him off the show this Monday, he's going to be back on TV the week after, whether he can wrestle or not. And if John Cena can't wrestle, that means we've got to listen to John Cena promos, which also are very hit or miss. For every one really great promo that Cena does, he has four shit ones. Is that what you want? You want more John Cena promos? I mean, think about this. Think things through before you talk about how happy you are that this guy suffered a horrible injury. Forget the fact that just wishing injury on somebody is a stupid thing to do. I mean, for God's sakes, if Vince Russo came back and was going to be a wrestler and got hurt, which he probably would because he doesn't belong in the ring, I'm not going to come on my show and say, man, I'm so happy Vince Russo got hurt. Made my day. No, of course I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to rejoice that somebody got hurt. I'll be happy that he's not wrestling anymore because he has no business in the ring. But, you know, hopefully he'll get well soon. And he'll move on with the rest of his life. I'm not going to sit here and you know, do the dance of joy because Vince Russo got hurt and he happens to be somebody who I don't care for. If you don't care for John Cena, if you don't like John Cena, that's fine. You can boo and cheer whoever you want. I don't give a shit who you cheer for. I don't care who you like and who you don't like. And I can understand if people are frustrated having John Cena in the same spot for 12 years, 13 years. I know. Believe me, I feel the same way. I hear you. But there's a difference between that and saying, oh, got hurt. This is great. Let's celebrate. Let's throw a freaking party. Like, no, you're a moron. And it just reinforces a stereotype that exists when it comes to wrestling fans. Now, it's not something that's exclusive to wrestling. You have it in other sports, too. I mean, believe me, like, I'm a Mets fan. I can't tell you how many times a shitty player on the Mets, and believe me, there have been some shitty players on the Mets in the last decade, got hurt. Again, something else the Mets are very familiar with. Injured players. Can't tell you how many times guys have gotten hurt, and on certain websites in the comment sections, people are celebrating the fact that, hey, so-and-so got hurt. Maybe now they can call this guy up from AAA, and they can slot him in there and give this kid a chance. And you know, it's like, yeah, something positive may come from this. It may make the team better and stronger, and I get that. But to celebrate the fact that this guy broke his leg, or to celebrate the fact that John Cena broke his nose, and I saw a lot of that, and it just makes me shake my head. Like, what's wrong with people? You know what I mean? Like, where does that line, where do you cross that line from just hating the fact that John Cena has been in that spot on top for so long and cross over into, I want to see this guy suffer bodily harm? Where do you draw that line? When do you cross over that line? And is that a mental health issue? Is that an anger management issue? I don't get it. I really just don't understand it. Stone Cold Podcast is back after Raw this Monday night. He's going to have Paige on as his guest. Obviously a last-minute replacement for Hulk Hogan. Austin on his podcast, which I'm guessing was taped probably the week before. He even mentioned something about him being on the next show. So unless Paige has something she'd like to share with the world, I think it's safe to say that she got Hogan's spot. Yeah, if they wanted somebody who was a judge on Tough Enough, I'm not sure if that was the criteria that went into this, but Paige is a judge on Tough Enough, so was Hogan. I don't know why they didn't just have Daniel Bryan do it. Guy has a new book out, you know, and everyone, he's already gone and told Sports Illustrated that it was, in fact, a concussion that has kept him out of action now for the past few months. It's no longer a big secret. So why not let him give the scoop to people watching on the network? Put him on Austin's show, and he can talk about it there. You know, then he can talk about how cautious WWE has been in clearing him and how they take the safety of their performers very seriously and, you know, blah, blah, blah. It kind of baffles me that they didn't think of doing this first. Paige has been wrestling since she was practically in the womb, so I'm sure she'll have plenty to say, but after watching her on Tough Enough, I think I've had my fill for now. And one last thing here. JBL is teasing on Twitter that he's going to have a big announcement to make this week. The biggest announcement of his career. Hopefully it's an early retirement.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
NXT this week opened with Dash Wilder and Scott Dawson taking on Enzo Amore and Colin Cassidy, who you would think they would be grooming for a tag team title match in Brooklyn. That would seem to make sense, but in a head-scratcher, Dash Wilder and Scott Dawson got the win. And they pinned Enzo Amore. Actually, did they pin Enzo? Yeah, they pinned Enzo to win the match. And it's head-scratching because, like I said, you would think, especially now that the vaudevillains are out of the picture, having lost this past week. The Kaz and Enzo would be next in line, you know, being built up for a title match. And you watch the TV, and that doesn't seem to be the case, even though I'm sure that's going to be the end result. Why you would do this? The only way this makes sense is if the idea is to set up a four-way at TakeOver in Brooklyn for the tag team titles. You got Blake and Murphy defending against Kaz and Enzo, Dawson and Wilder, who got their first win here, so putting them in a title match doesn't even make a lot of sense. But they did beat Kaz and Enzo, so I guess if they're going to be in there, you'd have Dawson and Wilder and maybe Jason Jordan and Chad Gable rounding things out. That I could see. That's the only thing I could come up with to have this make even the slightest bit of sense. But this was quite surprising when I saw the outcome of this match. Baron Corbin beat former TNA star Jesse Sorensen in a quick squash with the End of Days. 20 seconds, 1, 2, 3. I don't even know if it went a full 20 seconds. Jesse Sorensen is the one who had his neck broken, almost died, when Zema Ion did a, I think it was a moonsault, landed right on top of his head. You know, the whole thing where Dixie Carter supposedly told Jesse Sorensen's family, you know, he'll have a job with us for life, don't you worry. And then, of course, they cut him because that's what TNA does. So here he was on NXT, and I knew he was wrestling again. I think he had gotten out of wrestling, but then was wrestling again. He might actually be the champion somewhere in some independent promotion now, I'm not sure. I was not expecting him on this show. So I don't know if that's a sign that maybe they would use him in the future, sign him to a deal. I don't think he has any kind of deal with them. Maybe they just brought him in. Maybe it was a tryout. I don't know. There wasn't really much to try out. Like I said, he was pretty much just one and done. It was very weird to see him here. Tyler Breeze demanded that William Regal tell him who his opponent is for TakeOver, and all Regal told him was, "Be careful what you wish for." Thankfully for the rest of us, we have this little thing called the internet, so we know before Tyler Breeze does. Jason Jordan and Chad Gable beat Elias Sampson and something Valenzuela Jr. I didn't get his first name. Chad Gable, so much fun to watch. This guy is just, he's so much fun. He gets in there, he's doing all the mat wrestling stuff, people go crazy for it. They won again with their move where Jordan tosses the guy into the air and Gable catches him on the way down with a back suplex into a bridge. They're calling it Grand Amplitude. No idea how they came up with that name, but okay. And then we had a Bull Dempsey video package. I don't even know how to describe this. The only way I can describe this, they had some highlights of him over the last several weeks, stuffing his face with food, barely able to move. He was in like a food coma. Regal had warned him, you better shape up or ship out. And then we see Bull Dempsey come out of one of the locker rooms, and he's wearing like neon Zubaz pants. He looks like something out of a 1980s fitness video, or probably the WWF locker room in the 1980s, let's be honest. They have some cheesy 80s like theme music in the background that they play, and they show him in the gym attempting to work out, failing miserably. And the tagline at the end of the video, and I guess this is something they're going to try to get the fans to chant, which may come back to bite them on the ass, but okay, they want the fans, I guess, to chant, "Bullfit! Get Bullfit!" That's the new tagline. Look, maybe I'm in the minority here. I'm amused by this. If it wasn't for this stupid gimmick, this guy would be one step away from, hey, you know, good luck in your future endeavors. So it's giving him something to do. It's going to turn him into a massive babyface once he's actually wrestling on TV again. I like it. He's an undercard guy with an undercard gimmick. There's got to be a comedy guy in the bunch. And you know what? It's better than being fired. And I actually do think it's kind of amusing, so I'm a fan, but I can understand people who might not be. But just think of it from that perspective, okay? What would this guy be doing were it not for this gimmick? He wouldn't be doing anything. Because once he got beat, the mystique, whatever mystique there was for Bull Dempsey, was gone. So it was only a matter of time before he ended up with a gimmick like this anyway. Charlotte made short work of Dana Brooke with natural selection that clears the way for her to lose to Bayley when Dana interferes. That's not a spoiler. Oh, I guess it could be a spoiler, but that's just what I think will happen. Kevin Owens A rare jobber squash match for him here on NXT. He beat Martin Stone with the pop-up powerbomb, then powerbombed him on the edge of the ring apron after the match. Climbed up to the top rope and mocked Finn Balor's entrance, which I thought was hilarious. Kevin Owens is so great. Main event was Blake and Murphy retaining their tag team titles over the Vaudevillains when Alexa Bliss grabbed Aiden English by the ankle in the middle of their attempt at their whirly dervish finish. Blake rolled up Aiden English for the pin. After the match, the Vaudevillains attacked Blake and Murphy out of frustration. So they knocked him out of the picture. So now we're left alone in the ring with the Vaudevillains and Alexa Bliss. And Alexa doesn't know where to go. She's scared at first. She's calling for Blake. She's calling for Murphy. Nobody's coming to her rescue. And the Vaudevillains, you know, they're a couple of chivalrous guys. They hold the ropes open for Alexa Bliss to leave. And that's when she gets all cocky. She slaps Aiden English. She slaps Simon Gotch, like, hard, right across the face. And instead of attacking her, they just let her walk off. Now, I am by no means suggesting they should have given this woman a spike pile driver on the concrete floor or anything like that. But, you know, to just let her walk off like that just made these two look like a couple of chumps. Now, given their whole act, their whole shtick, I don't understand why Simon Gotch couldn't have given her an airplane spin. And then you set her back down gently and she could stumble around like she's drunk and fall out of the ring. They don't even have to assault the girl to get a nice pop from the crowd to close the show. A simple airplane spin would have solved all of this. They're the Vaudevillains. That's exactly the sort of thing they would do. But they let her go. Okay, whatever. So that was NXT. This week it's going to be Samoa Joe against Rhino in a battle of the former TNA stars. Maybe they can shoehorn Jesse Sorensen in there and make it a three-way. Speaking of TNA, I don't have a whole lot to say about TNA. I have given up on Impact. But these tapings, I have to make a comment about this. They have taped something like over 100 matches, literally 100 matches in a 9 or 10 day time span. They've also started and ended the entire Global Force Wrestling quote unquote invasion angle. That's how far ahead they have taped. They have taped so far ahead, this thing hasn't even played itself out on television at the beginning. They have started and ended the so-called invasion storyline. They had a match with a guy's prosthetic leg on the line, who has since won back that leg, by the way. And they had Matt Hardy dressed up in a Bigfoot costume. I said this on Twitter. It's like the writing team was just sitting around, and they took three hits of Molly before all of these tapings started. And they said, fuck yeah, let's do this. And they just went, and they wrote a bunch of matches. And they wrote a bunch of segments. And they said, hey, this sounds like a good idea. Let's have this guy put his leg on the line. Oh, I got an even better idea. Let's get Bigfoot on the show. And on and on and on and on and on this went. I'm not going to go through all the taping results. Literally, when I first started reading all the Impact spoilers, there was so much stuff to go through. I got a headache. I said, I can't do this. I just can't do this. The situation regarding MVP, there was a note in the Observer newsletter this week. I wanted to comment on this because this is just so TNA. So I mentioned that MVP is gone from TNA. The whole Hernandez situation probably had something to do with that. Well, it turns out that TNA fired MVP. This was not a decision that MVP made on his own because he had a contract that runs through February of next year. He admitted that on his own Twitter account when he got tired of people questioning his contract status. And the reason he's gone is because they fired him, and they fired him over the whole Hernandez situation. Now, you think about this for a second. MVP recommended to TNA that they bring in Hernandez. Now, where the breakdown in communication was, who knows? What questions may have been asked, who knows? The fact is, it's up to TNA to check and make sure this guy is not under contract to another promotion. That's not MVP's responsibility. It's not even Hernandez. It's like going on a job interview, right? You're on a job interview. They ask you a bunch of questions. You can lie, and that doesn't reflect very well on you if you lie. But they ask you for references, right? Now, maybe some companies won't bother checking, or they'll call one, and they'll be like, all right, sounds good, we'll hire you. A lot of companies, guess what? They check up on those references. If you give them four people to call, they're going to call those four people. And they're going to ask them a bunch of questions. And they're going to make sure you're the right person for the job. That's what happens in a job interview, a basic job interview. Here, you're dealing with contracts and television. And this fucking company doesn't even put a call in to Lucha Underground to make sure and say, hey, is this guy under contract? He's on television. This is not like Hernandez was part of some indie promotion somewhere. He was still on the Lucha Underground. But they don't even think to check on these sorts of things. Instead, they fire MVP. MVP, hey, you recommended we take the guy? He burned us? You're fired. This is the state of TNA, TNA management. I'm not even faulting the guys. Guys are out there. They're wrestling 100 matches in 10 days. They're busting their asses. It's the idiots who run the show. The most entertaining thing about TNA these days is nothing that happens on camera. It's all the behind-the-scenes stuff. It's the best show in wrestling. It's even better than Lucha Underground. They should have a camera crew follow the idiots who run that company around all day long and sit in on all the meetings and make that a reality show. I'd watch that shit every week. Are you kidding me? It'd be the best wrestling show out there. But the real best wrestling show is Lucha Underground. I did not see Ring of Honor this week because, again, they bumped it out of the 8 p.m. slot. Usually I'd watch NXT and ROH back-to-back, and I didn't get to do that, and I got busy, and I just didn't get a chance to see the show. It's still sitting on my DVR, so unfortunately no ROH review this week. But Lucha Underground, we had part one of Ultima Lucha. They divided it up into two episodes. So the one-hour first episode was this week, and the two-hour season and possibly series finale is going to be on Wednesday. Still no confirmation of a second season. I thought this week's show was a lot of fun to watch. They are furthering the Black Lotus storyline with her still being locked up in a cage next to Dario Cueto's brother, Matanza, who Cueto now claims did not kill Black Lotus's parents. But instead, he tried to pin the whole thing on Dragon Azteca. Dragon Azteca is the masked luchador who kidnapped her, if you remember. He was training her to get revenge on the man who killed her parents. I'm sure Dario is full of shit when he says that it wasn't his brother. Dragon Azteca did show up at the very end of the show, and the last thing we saw was actually him entering the temple. So, I think shit's about to go down. Dario was all decked out this week in a tuxedo with a bow tie. He was the only one who dressed for the occasion. They call him Cage against the Mac. Falls count anywhere. Great spot here during the match. Mac grabbed two cans of Miller Lite, smacked them together, delivered a stone-cold stunner to Cage on the floor. Place went nuts when he did it. Only got a two count, though. I'm sure if Austin has got to be pissed. All these guys using his move is like a fucking setup move, people kicking at it, too. If you're going to use the move, at least beat somebody with it. So I'm sure this didn't sit well with Stone Cold. But they brawled all over the place. This is a crazy match. They brawled all over the place. They ended up on one of those balcony platforms way up. There happened to be a couple of cinder blocks sitting up there. And the match ended with Cage giving the Mac a curb stomp. Not the Seth Rollins curb stomp. Like, think Paul Burchill. Think American History X. That kind of curb stomp. Gave him a curb stomp right through the cinder blocks. And that was it. Pinned him 1-2-3. Cage got the win, which I'm pretty sure I predicted Cage would win. It seemed obvious to me because Mac was getting all these fluke wins over him. He had to win a match at some point. The Disciples of Death with Katrina against Ivelisse, Angelico, and Son of Havoc for the Trios Tag Team titles. Match itself was nothing special. It was all right. You know, nothing overly amazing. It wasn't even that long of a match. Disciples of Death now sporting colored demon masks that I have to say look quite badass. It's one of those times I wish Lucha Underground had their shit together and actually had some kind of merchant, like official merchandise store and was marketing this stuff. I think they'd sell a ton of those things. We had the big spot here. to no one's surprise, it was Angelico who has a death wish. He did yet another balcony dive onto the Disciples of Death, who were standing outside the ring. I don't know how far he went, but it was just unbelievably crazy. All the stunts he does are just crazy. This guy's got a death wish. He's going to die in the temple one day. It might be better off if they don't have a second season. That might actually spare him his life. I'm hearing now that WWE may have interest in him. I guess he was at the PWG show, and Regal was there, and a couple of other people were there. They were scouting, and they were really impressed with him. He's got a 7-year contract with Lucha Underground, so if they're in this state of flux, there may or may not be a second season. You know, this guy's all locked up for the foreseeable future. Plus, I think he has a contract with AAA, so I don't think he's going anywhere. Although I'd love to see him in NXT. I'm trying to think, where would he jump off from? What's the highest point of the NXT arena this guy could jump off from? Because you know he would want to. They lost their tag team titles. The new champions are the Disciples of Death. Death? I said depth. Yes. Yes. I feel like that would be actually a great name for like an optometry tag team, maybe. Maybe like an architect, right? We are the Disciples of Depth. Anyway, they are the champions now. The big spot, the money shot of the match came between Katrina and Ivelisse. Ivelisse still with her broken ankle, and she tossed her crutches aside, and people went crazy. And she tackled Katrina, and then Katrina grabbed the rock, the Mil Muertes rock that she carries around, and bashed Ivelisse in the head with it. And that allowed the Disciples of Death, not Depth, to get the pin. And the biggest thing of all, they built this up throughout the entire season, and I must say, payoff in the end, well worth it. We got our lick of death. Katrina licked Ivelisse. She licked her. She licked her eye socket. It was kind of gross, to be honest with you, but yeah, there it is. We have new trios champs. Drago and Hernandez got the main event here on part one of Ultima Lucha, a Believer's Backlash match. The premise was the fans, certain fans, not the entire audience, were picked. They were handed straps, and they would surround the ring. And if the participants were thrown to the outside, or if they tried to escape, the fans could whip them. And from what I understand, it was a mix of real fans and a few planted fans, but for the most part, they were real fans. The hot tub guy, some of you may know who he is. I feel like he's in the audience almost every single week. He has a podcast. I think it's up on YouTube. I don't know what the name is. But he literally sits in a hot tub and does reviews of, like, indie shows and stuff. Little side story, Hot Tub Guy once contacted me on Facebook with a link to his YouTube channel. And I watched this, and I thought to myself, okay, points to him for having a hot tub. I don't have a hot tub. Good for him. He looked like he was having the time of his life out there. He even got a hard whip on Hernandez in at one point. Actually, the first time Hernandez got thrown outside and whipped by everybody, he came back in, and I thought he was bleeding from the forehead. It looked like blood. And for the rest of the match, I'm like, is he bleeding? I can't tell. Is that blood? It looks like blood. And finally, I realized he got whipped. He must have gotten whipped in the face with one of those leather straps, because it was a welt across his forehead. It wasn't blood. So that must have sucked. But these guys went at it. Again, basic match. Nothing too crazy. I mean, nothing was going to be as crazy as that opening match with Cage and Mac, or that dive by Angelico in the match before. It was very interesting to see the fans out there participating in the match. It was such a unique thing that it just made it kind of cool. Even though this was probably the match I had the least amount of interest in going into the show. But Drago got the win. Hernandez, I guess, is officially done with Lucha Underground. I mean, they ain't going to have him back now. So I guess that was it for him. And this Wednesday is the 2-hour finale of Ultima Lucha with Vampiro wrestling Pentagon Jr. The announced team is going to be Matt Stryker and Michael Chiavello, who's the Australian guy who hosts that show, The Voice Versus, on Access TV. So this week may have been the final time we ever get to hear Vampiro on commentary again. Because even if there is a second season, the rumor has been that they're looking for a new person to pair off with Matt Stryker. Now, it's possible they don't find anybody, and it's like, hey, Vamp, you want to come back? But I'll be bummed if that happens because, you know, look, I was not a fan of Vampiro at first. If you go back and listen to the first one or two reviews of the show, I think I ripped on him. I was not a fan at all. But he grew on me like a fungus as the show went on, to the point where they became, him and Stryker became my favorite announce team in all of wrestling. I wish the announcers now, like in WWE, had as much passion, real passion, not fake passion, real passion in their voice the way that this guy does. He sounds like he's having fun, number one. And number two, I mean, when there's something to get excited about, he gets excited. I mean, he'll throw the headset down, jump up, and, you know, slap hands with the fans and do a lap around the ring to calm himself down. I mean, it's crazy. He's got a lot of passion for it. So if that really was the end for him this past week's show, it would make me very sad. But this Wednesday we have the 7-way Gift of the Gods match. Tejano against Blue Demon Jr. Alberto El Patron against Johnny Mundo. Vampiro against Pentagon Jr. in a Cero Miedo match, Zero Fear. And Prince Puma will defend the Lucha Underground Championship against Mil Muertes, plus, I guess, whatever happens with Black Lotus and Matanza. I did all my predictions last week on the show, so you can check those out on episode 393, if you would like to do so. I guess next week is going to be the last Lucha Underground review, at least for a few months. That sucks. That really fucking sucks. Look, when I call it the best wrestling show on TV, I'm not, you know, hyping it up. It's not hyperbole. Like, it's legit the best wrestling show on TV. I mean that. Whenever I say that, I mean it 100%. And so of all the shows, how many freaking reviews do I do of shows? 3, 4, 5 TV shows, I feel like, in a given week I'll review. And the one show that's going away is the one that I like the most. Let's hope they get that TV deal. Mailbag time. If you have questions, you can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Joey from Canada. Do you think WWE will ever present a Divas Ladder match? I remember they did one in OVW back in 2006 between Katie Lee Burchill and Beth Phoenix. But to my knowledge, there's never been one on the main roster. I've had an idea for a few years now of how they could try to give the Divas their own Money in the Bank ladder match. I think that some of the current Divas, particularly the new recruits from NXT, could pull off a great one. Well, if there's one thing WWE hates more than blood on TV, it's the Divas showing blood on TV, which is probably something you'd end up seeing in a Divas ladder match. But you know what? I do think we're going to see one. I do. Money in the Bank? No. That would be a disaster. Doing a Divas Money in the Bank would be a disaster with that many women climbing things at once. You're just asking for someone to die. Plus, here's the other aspect to that. You have a division with, how many girls are in that division? 8? Maybe, are there 10? I don't even know if there are that many. I'm talking not even NXT. The active, current, main Divas roster. Do they even have 10 Divas right now? I mean, by sheer process of elimination, every single one of those women are going to end up getting title shots anyway. There's no need to have a briefcase. It's so small. But I do think we'll see a ladder match. I think we'll probably see a ladder match between two of the NXT girls at one point. Maybe, Charlotte and Sasha, Sasha and Becky. There's so many things they could be doing to spice up the Divas division. I mean, it's good that they're kind of going in that direction now, making it mean something, giving them extra minutes, extra time on Mondays. But I mean, in terms of gimmick matches, like a cage match, which they've done once. I think they've done one Divas cage match back in like 03. A ladder match I don't think they've ever done. Maybe they did, but I don't have any memory of it at all. And there's just so many things like that that they could be doing, giving them more promo time to spice things up. And yeah, they're only really starting to get behind them now, so I'll give it a little while, I think, before we actually end up seeing something like that. Blake from Alabama. I was watching Kevin Nash, his special on the network about his induction into the Hall of Fame, and it looks like there will not be a Click induction, but possibly a DX/NWO induction later on. Do you think Sean Waltman deserves to go into the Hall of Fame as an individual, or only as part of either DX or the NWO? Frankly, I see more reasons to induct the rest of the Click based on their individual talent and influence, but Sean is more associated with being a group member rather than as a singles talent or by influence. He was a talented wrestler, but not as talented as the rest. What do you think? I disagree. I couldn't disagree more. Not as talented as the rest, really. I would argue he was more talented than Kevin Nash. But Nash had better hair and about 12 inches in height on Sean Waltman. Waltman was one of the best workers in that entire company. I'm talking when he was in WCW and when he was the 1-2-3 kid in WWE, and even when he came back and he became X-Pac. He was one of the best workers in that entire company, wherever he was. He was the first small guy, even smaller than Bret and Shawn. I mean, Bret and Shawn were like 6 foot, 6'1", 230 pounds. He was even smaller than them. First guy like that to really get a shot in WWE. You know, I don't know that I would call him a trailblazer or use a word like that like you might for Rey Mysterio. Maybe he was. You know, for the smaller guys, maybe he was. I think Jericho in one of his books talked about how highly Vince McMahon thought of Sean Waltman as a worker. I think Jericho even had to like work with Waltman and like run things by him and stuff. It was almost like a mentor to him. But Vince had a very high opinion of Waltman as a worker in the ring. You know, like if you couldn't get a good match out of working with X-Pac, then you were a lost cause, that kind of thing. To be viewed that way, you've got a lot of talent. You know, what else did Nash have? Okay, he was a better promo than Waltman was, at least in WCW. I will give you that. Kevin Nash is a promo, at least in WCW, yes. Sean Waltman could be a mess. Kevin Nash, more often than not, he was articulate, he could be funny. I'd call him a better promo. As Diesel, it wasn't like he was lighting the world on fire with his talking. I don't even know that I would call him a much better performer on the microphone in WWE. I mean, give me an example of one truly great Diesel promo. You know, you can't think of very many of them. And it's not like as the 1-2-3 kid, he got a lot of chances to talk anyway. So if you take the talking and put that aside, I mean, honestly, what does Nash really have over Waltman other than size? And because of that size, he became a world champion. Waltman was never a world champion. Going into the Hall of Fame, it doesn't matter. Titles don't matter. So I don't want to hear, oh, well, you know, Nash won a world title in WWE and WCW and he was a draw. Actually, he wasn't a draw. So you can't even really use that argument like, oh, well, Kevin Nash was such a bigger draw than Waltman was. Maybe compared to Waltman, maybe he was a little bit, but it's not like Nash was some super duper draw. Quite the opposite. You know, business tanked with him on top in WWE. I mean, Waltman could wrestle circles around Nash in a match, and you know, he can make his opponents look like $1 million, even if they were only worth about half that. To say that he wasn't as talented as the rest, I think that's a slap in the face. I don't agree with that at all. And to say he had no influence, after what I talked about, him being small and kind of paving the way for smaller guys, that's just not true. He absolutely was influential. If that's the criteria, then he's a Hall of Famer. If the criteria is who drew the most money, then he's not a Hall of Famer. Last I checked, that wasn't the criteria. So I'd put him in on his own. I don't like this idea of inducting factions and guys going into the Hall of Fame, you know, two or three times. I just think that's stupid. Mike says, do you think indie wrestlers should start wrestling in a sports entertainment style? Now the WWE is using that kind of wrestling on their product. It just seems the indies might have to go in a new direction. Huh. So your solution is to just have everyone start wrestling the same style that WWE teaches. What a boring wrestling world it would be if everybody followed the WWE style. That's exactly what's wrong with WWE. I like the different styles. I watch Lucha Underground, and it's totally different than what I would see on Raw. Ring of Honor, It's similar in some ways. Actually, I'll tell you what. The main event style in WWE, complete ripoff of Ring of Honor. All the near falls, kicking out of moves left and right. That was always my big pet peeve with Ring of Honor main events. They've kind of dialed it back a little bit in recent years. It used to be a lot worse when I would go to the live shows. So in a lot of ways, I think WWE has borrowed from the ROH style. So they're similar in some ways. In other ways, Ring of Honor and WWE are completely different. Just be safe. Be safe and don't do anything too stupid. But aside from that, I mean, no. No, I don't want them to adopt the sports entertainment style. I'm not even really sure what you mean by that. Sports entertainment style. Isn't all wrestling sports entertainment? You know, WWE is not the only one doing that. Indie promotions have storylines, they have comedy segments, they have all that stuff. You should get out and go to one of these days. You'll have a lot of fun. Jacob from Cape Coral, Florida. You said Chad Gable reminds you of Kurt Angle, which I see in him as well, but what do you think of Gable and Jason Jordan as a tag team? They remind me of Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas. Is this a good representation of these two guys? Well, I don't know if it's good or bad. I mean, I think both of them have the potential to go a lot further than those two did. I think probably individually they could be stars down the road. I like the team a lot. I've only seen them in two matches, but I really, really dig it. More so Gable than Jordan, although Jordan's the kind of guy they would just push to the moon. But I think Gable's got something, and I love his act. I say act. It's, you know, he's a former Olympian. He's an amateur wrestler. He dresses like an amateur wrestler. He's a little goofy. He's got the towel, the whole, ready, willing, and Gable thing. It's not really, he doesn't really have much of a gimmick beyond that. I just enjoy what I've seen from him so far. So, yeah, I like the team. I think they could go far. The comparison to Haas and Benjamin, I think, is perfect because I think the same thing. I think it's the singlets and the fact that one is white, one is black. It just kind of fits the mold. The singlets, though, that puts it over the top. So, yeah, I kind of see the whole Haas and Benjamin comparison there, but I think these guys could go a lot further than they ever went. This comes from Glenn. What are your thoughts on WWE wanting ZZ off of Tough Enough and possibly rigging the voting? Is that WWE saying to fans, we do not care what you want and will not listen? Because ZZ got the biggest pop when they were at Raw July 13th, and he has been saved in voting more times than anybody else this season. Is it clear, or it is clear, he says, that fans love ZZ, so why would WWE even question wanting him off the show? He does not have to wrestle to be in the company. He could be a non-wrestler. Yes, but WWE is not interested in paying $250,000 to some 19-year-old kid to be a non-wrestler. That's the problem. They created this problem. It's their fault. They created this problem when they came up with the format of the show. They have no one to blame for this but themselves. I don't know that I buy that whole story about them rigging the vote. I mean, maybe they want him off the show. I'm sure they do. They probably do want him off the show. I don't know that they can rig the vote. The only way I could see them getting out of this and getting ZZ off, I mean, I guess the only way, you put him in the bottom three, which is not a stretch. I think he's been in the bottom three every single week, or most weeks. You put him in the bottom three, and then you have two of the judges use their saves on the other two people in the bottom three. I mean, if they do that, that's a real fuck you to the fans, which has never stopped them before. You know, especially coming off last week, they had Amanda saved by The Miz because she's hot. Idiot. So he used his save on her. She was dead last in the fan voting. So they went against what the fans wanted last week. Would they do it again 2 weeks in a row? I don't know. I mean, that's the only way I see ZZ being voted off. Or not even voted off. He's not going to be voted off. That's the only way I see him being eliminated. You kind of collude and have your judges use their saves, and that's it. That's the only way. If they want to do it, they'll do it. There's very little reality about this reality show. There's more reality on Tough Talk, which is the show that talks about the reality show after it's already over. You know, ZZ, I was a big fan of ZZ the first day out. I still like the guy. He's got great personality. He's a likable guy. But the fact is, if he's not showing any improvement in the ring, if he's not showing any improvement with his physique or his cardio, then he's not worth investing in. You know, that's their call. If they want him off, then he'll be off. But Tough Enough is just a glorified popularity contest. If they don't want the most popular guy to win, then maybe they should have thought that out a little bit more before they came up with the concept for this show. It's just a thought. Quick buy or sell. This comes from, I guess, somebody who shall remain nameless. Earl Hebner or Tommy Young? Tommy Young. I'm going to say Tommy Young. Even Earl Hebner would probably say Tommy Young. It's funny, when I got this email, I actually did a search, because I have no idea what Tommy Young is. I know he's still alive, but I have no idea what he's been up to. So I did a search just to try to find out, like, what is this guy doing? Is he just retired, or is he still coming out for shows? Like, what's going on? And there was actually an interview that came up with Earl Hebner, because he had mentioned Tommy Young, so I guess it came up in the search results. And Earl Hebner himself calls Tommy Young the greatest referee of all time. He actually was mentored by Tommy very early in his career. Having seen more of those NWA matches with him as the ref as I got older, because I didn't see them as a kid, I can agree with that. I mean, he was very good at his job. He was to that promotion what Earl was to WWE as its senior official. I will say, though, I loved Earl Hebner. The way, you know, he would count the three in those big pay-per-view main events. He would count slowly, like he'd do like one, two, and then he would hold up for like an extra second or two for added dramatic effect. And then finally he would hit the three. It just made things a little more dramatic that way. But he'd also take some sick bumps. You know, the one bump, I have to say, he took a lot of bumps in his career. It's amazing that he's not more beat up than he is and he's still reffing. I mean, Tim White got knocked into the Hell in a Cell and fucked up his shoulder and tried to come back and couldn't, and that was pretty much the end for him. But Earl's not a young guy either. He's been pretty durable over the years, but this one bump in particular that he took that I still remember it vividly, like I just saw it yesterday. It was from the Beware of Dog pay-per-view, which was that pay-per-view where the power went out, and they only showed the first and last match. And the last match was Shawn Michaels and the British Bulldog for the championship, and Earl was the ref, of course. And I think it was on a shoulder tackle. It might have been a basic like shoulder tackle spot. Bulldog ran into Hebner and knocked him out of the ring. You have never seen someone get knocked so violently out of the ring before. I don't even think he made contact with the ropes. He just went flying through them like nothing but air and just smacked the floor. It was just brutal. Oh, so brutal. And it's Bulldog. Bulldog's a big guy, you know, big jacked up guy, and he's rutted into little Earl Hebner here and just knocked him right out of the ring. That one stands out to me. As far as referees, I mean, probably one of my least favorite referees was, and this is a guy who had a lot of experience. I think his father was in the business. He was second generation. I'm sure he's a swell guy, but I was never a fan of Nick Patrick. And I was never a fan of Nick Patrick, not because I'm still pissed at him for joining the NWO. It annoyed me to no end the way he used to slap the mat when he would count. It's such a silly thing. Everyone's got their preferences. That was one of mine, to not have a referee smack the mat the way that this guy did. It just would annoy me. Thankfully, at that point, I watched more WWF than WCW, so I didn't have to see it. But yeah, he'd probably be pretty low on my list. We had another buy or sell here. I'm actually so backlogged in these buy or sell, which is, you guys have really taken to the segment. I've been getting a lot of emails and suggestions, and hopefully I'll get to them as the weeks go on. So we'll plow through one more this week because there's so many of them. This comes from Feely in Houston, Texas. If, God forbid, Lucha Underground is not renewed for a second season. Ugh, don't tease me like that. Ricochet will have a choice between New Japan or ROH, but could also be invited to join WWE. With Balor or Kenta likely to be called up in the next several months to the main roster, a new well-known indie star may be needed. Buy or sell, Ricochet in New Japan or Ricochet in WWE? I would say Ricochet in WWE, because I watch more WWE than I do New Japan. I'm sure in New Japan he would tear it up. he could have some great match. I mean, imagine Ricochet and AJ Styles, Ricochet and Okada. I mean, they could have some freaking awesome matches in New Japan. I have a subscription to New Japan World. I guess it's not like I couldn't watch it, but generally speaking, I watch a lot more WWE and NXT than I do New Japan. And I think he would fit in well there. I mean, he'd have to tone things down a little bit. They wouldn't want him to do all of his flashy shit. I mean, that's just whoever you are. Like, if they got Angelico, if Angelico actually were to say, yeah, I want to come to WWE, and he signed a contract to go to NXT, he'd have to tone things down. He wouldn't be doing balcony dives from the NXT arena. I guarantee you that. So, even so, I think these guys are so much fun to watch. They're so... you know, great at what they do. Even if you tone them down a little bit, these guys are going to get over. They're going to be massive stars in front of that audience. And NXT is going to need some new blood very soon, because otherwise it's going to get very stale very quickly. So Balor, it's not going to be that long, I think, before Balor's up on the main roster. Sami Zayn, once he comes back, I don't think it'll be very long before he's on the main roster. They're going to need new guys. Unless they're just going to push Samoa Joe and nobody else, they're going to need more guys. They have UHA Nation, so I assume we'll see him on TV very soon, but they need more. Either one of those guys, you know, Angelico, Ricochet, I could think of a bunch of other guys from Lucha Underground who WWE should want to get their hands on. I think they would do very well. I still am amazed that they passed on Ricochet. I just don't get that at all. He had a tryout a few years ago, and they actually passed on him. And why? It beats the hell out of me. unless he fucked up somehow or said the wrong thing, I cannot make heads or tails out of that one. I look at a guy like that, you know, Prince Puma, for those who don't know, without the mask, because not everybody watches, you know, Ricochet matches. But they are one and the same. It's kind of funny to me they put a mask on him in Lucha Underground, because he's not a bad-looking guy, you know? I could see a guy like that going to WWE and all the woman, you know, women swooning over him. So, you know, he's a good-looking guy. He's in great shape. This fucker's got abs like, what's his name? Balor. His freaking abs have abs. I have abs, too. They just happen to be protected by this layer of fat that's over them. But he's in great shape. He's a great wrestler. He's fun to watch. He's still relatively young, I think. And they passed on him. Well, you know, their loss is Lucha Underground's gain. But if I had to pick one over the other, I would like to see him go to WWE. So if you have suggestions for buy or sell, keep emailing them to me. And any other questions, thesolemonster@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter, @solemonster. I believe this morning we officially passed 11,000 followers on there. Don't forget, it's a new month now, but you can still take advantage of our Audible offer by using our link. Again, we had our biggest month ever in July, which is awesome. I mean, you guys went above and beyond with the sign-ups in July. And that Brian book, I'm telling you, it's getting great reviews. I'm planning on reading it one of these days. I'll get a review up on YouTube, hopefully, after that. It's a lot of good stuff, I guess, in that book. A very honest look at his career. If you're not a Daniel Bryan fan, you can cash in another book. It doesn't have to be the Bryan book. But you can get it for free. Again, punch in audibletrial.com/solemonster. Go through the sign-up process. You get yourself a 30-day trial, which means you can sample the service. If you don't like it, you can cancel any time in those 30 days and not be billed. But you get one free book just for signing up. And even if you cancel, you get to keep the book. So it's a great way to get a book for free. And sample some other audiobooks if you like that sort of thing. Use our link. When you do, it helps the show. audibletrial.com/solemonster. We have our store up, prowrestlingtees.com/solemonstersoundsoff. 20 different t-shirts, up to a size 5XL on all the shirts. They ship all over the world, all over the globe. If you're in Iceland, if you're in Greenland, if you're in Poland, if you're in Germany, if you're in Italy, Spain, UK, Canada, Mexico, Venezuela, Bolivia, Colombia, Cambodia, anywhere in the world, you can have yourself a Sound Off shirt. Actually, I don't know if they ship the shirts to Greenland. They probably do. I'll have to find out about that. But anyway, buy a shirt. We'll be back next week for a brand new episode of the podcast. That'll be episode 395. on our march to 400, which, by my math, if I don't miss a show between now and then, I believe September 13th is going to be episode 400. I'm open to suggestions if anybody has any ideas for that show. So, until next weekend, be well, stay safe. I am on my way to the Baseball Hall of Fame later this week, taking a little vacation to Cooperstown. Haven't been there since I was a kid. Should be interesting. I don't know what else there is to do there. I believe there's a brewery, so maybe I'll check that out. What sucks about that is I will not be around for Ultima Lucha. I may have to go on a full social media blackout. We'll see you next week.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
Watch these promos on NXT. Watch Raw. Watch a Randy Orton promo or a Sheamus promo. They never, ever look at the camera. It's because that's what they teach them now. You are not allowed to look into the camera. I think it's just completely idiotic. Why are their eyes not on me? That's how interviews always work. They're talking to me. They're speaking to us. They're supposed to be speaking to the fans. Maybe that's part of the reason why these people can't make a connection with the audience. Because they don't fucking look at us.
The Monster Sounds Off.
Since 2007, The Solomonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solo Monsters Sound Off.